From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief for July 5th. It's Riley, July 5th. 10 stories from overnight sourcing first, takes second. Let's get into it. First, from The Guardian World. Mysterious debris found on Queensland beaches could be space balls and may contain toxic rocket fuel. 6 pieces of odd metallic debris have washed up on North Queensland beaches, and the Australian Space Agency is now looking into what they actually are. Police have flagged the objects as potentially hazardous, saying they might contain chemicals that could be dangerous if disturbed. One specialist in space archaeology suggests they could be the space balls that sometimes fall off rockets after a launch, the small, hollow spheres used to balance weight or protect payloads. Those remnants are known to survive re-entry and end up on remote coastlines, which fits the pattern we're seeing. If they are indeed rocket leftovers, any toxic fuel residue would be a side effect of the original launch, not a new threat. The agency says it's running tests to confirm composition and trace the launch they might belong to, so we'll know soon whether it's just space junk or something that needs a cleanup. Next, second, from The Guardian UK. Can I take the day off for England's World Cup game, and what if I'm late for work? The 1 a.m. kickoff between Mexico and England means a lot of people will be up late, and many are already wondering how that will mesh with the morning rush. If the match goes to penalties, it could stretch close to 4 a.m., leaving little room for sleep before work starts. Employers are aware of the timing, and some are already fielding requests for flexible start times or half-day leave. A handful of companies have said they'll let staff shift their hours or work from home that day, but it isn't a universal policy. For those who can't get time off, the practical advice is simple: set multiple alarms, keep a coffee ready, and consider a quick power nap if you can. If you do need to call in sick, remember that honesty usually works better than a vague excuse. In short, plan ahead, talk to your manager early, and try to catch a few winks before the match ends. Up next, third, from Screen Rant, Pikachu gets official new look in latest Pokémon redesign. So Pokémon has been around for 30 years, and for the most part, the original creatures from the first generation have kept their same design since the 90s. There have been some tweaks here and there, like new regional variants and things like Mega Evolution, but overall the classic looks have stuck. Pikachu is a good example. It's gotten a bit thinner over the years, but it's still basically the same. The reason for this is probably that the original designs have become so iconic and beloved. It's hard for the franchise to make any major changes without risking alienating fans. I mean, these characters have been around for a long time and people have a strong emotional attachment to them. That being said, it seems like Pokémon is trying something new with Pikachu, giving it an official redesign. This is a big deal since Pikachu is basically the face of the franchise. It'll be interesting to see how fans react to the new look, and whether it'll be a one-time thing or if we can expect to see more redesigns in the future. It's also worth noting that this redesign could be a sign of things to come for the franchise as a whole. If Pokémon is willing to update Pikachu's look, maybe we'll see some other classic characters get a refresh as well. This could be a way for the franchise to feel fresh and new again, while still staying true to its roots. Overall, it's an exciting time for Pokémon fans, and it'll be cool to see how this new redesign of Pikachu plays out. And then, fourth, from Crypto Briefing, Bending Spoons lists on NASDAQ at $25.7 billion valuation as tokenized shares bridge crypto and traditional equity. Hey, I just read that Bending Spoons finally went public on NASDAQ, and the valuation landed at $25.7 billion. What's different this time is that the shares are being issued as blockchain tokens, so investors get a digital certificate that settles like a regular stock. The token layer talks to the existing clearing system, meaning the same custodians and regulators see a familiar security, but the ledger records each transfer instantly. Because the tokens sit on a public chain, regulators are now asking how to apply securities law to a crypto-native format, and the market is watching to see if the hybrid model sticks. Next, fifth, from The American Peasant, I love to hate your work. Band members, and how was it the music? Micah, it was amazing. Band members, you think we're amazing? Micah, oh, no, I hated the music. Friend of the band members, she's trashing your music. Micah, I'm not trashing their music. I said that I hated it. I didn't say it wasn't good. I said that I hated it. And people hate every band. From the movie The Alien, sound I adore drawings of exotic animals that were clearly made by someone who had never seen an elephant, giraffe, or rhinoceros. The artist had drawn the animal based on someone's description: long nose like a snake, ears like a ship's sails, a body like an enormous grape, and a tail like a piece of wee string. To the artist, their drawing drawing is correct. It fulfills the description, but to anyone who has seen the animal in person, the drawing doesn't even begin to capture what an elephant looks like. These antique animal drawings are like most modern furniture designs. The designer followed the written rules on proportion, volume, symmetry, value, color and detail/ornament. The piece should be perfect because it followed the rules faithfully, but it's not. It sucks. Why? Usually, the answer is that the designer hasn't seen enough furniture. They haven't fallen hopelessly in love with 23 cabinets, 4 turned bowls, and a trestle table this week. They don't have a crush that mutates every month on some form of ornament or door arrangement or oddball furniture form that doesn't even exist today. Armoires built like houses is my current crush. They don't have 30 floating furniture forms all bubbling in the back of their phone and their mind, trying to emerge through some work on the bench. Do you have a favorite molding this week? Do you ever think about changing your entire woodworking practice after visiting an excellent museum exhibit? Is your phone filled with almost as many photos of furniture that you didn't build as photos of your family or pets? Do you have photos of colors that make your insides squirm? One, all the good designers I know are in love with the visual world and behave like a giant receptor. Almost anything can plug into their receptor, from the curve of a cat's back to the layout of a door's panels to a stone bridge. When the information comes in, it usually gets sorted into 3 bins. That's beautiful and I love it, or I'm indifferent to that, to it's not beautiful and I hate that. All 3 feelings are valid. But the 2 important ones are the ones that relate to beauty. Let's get this out of the way. I believe that beauty exists. It's real, but I also believe that the bar for something to be beautiful is laughably low. Almost everything in the natural world is beautiful unless, weirdly, it has been modified by people. Have you ever seen an ugly tree, a plant that wasn't, when examined closely, perfectly proportioned, or a color in nature that didn't evoke the animal, vegetable, or mineral world? Everything that I design has a foot planted in the world around us. I'm sure it's possible somehow to work outside of nature, but for me that's like trying to see the 5th dimension. I just don't have the equipment. I look to trees to help me design chairs, mountains and rock formations for cabinets, clouds for tables, and gorgeous architecture for everything. Whether you like it or not, furniture is the stepchild of architecture. Almost everything we do with our furniture is rooted in the vast architectural record. Beautiful buildings might be our species' greatest achievement, and we are fortunate that we have an existing and written record of it that goes back thousands of years. Millions of talented builders were inspired by nature, and they distilled their thoughts into structures that can be studied by anyone today simply by walking around them. We can take their lessons and apply our own crushes with the natural world and the built world to make something else. I can't say that we'll make something new. And then there's the other side of the coin. The things we hate. I think that hate or revulsion is as important as love. It's a valid emotional reaction. Honestly, most furniture I see today in stores provokes zero reaction in me. I am indifferent to it. It is not worth caring about. Too, when I see a thing I hate, I spend time to figure out why, because this is important information. Up next, 6th, from the Daily Upside. Psychedelic Nation, psilocybin treatments offer new hope for people. Prozac hasn't helped open a ICEO. Sam Altman, once a very anxious and happy person, credits a psychedelic experience at a weekend-long retreat with helping him become a new man. He's not unique among Silicon Valley luminaries. Some of the 21st century's most famous tech innovators, from Steve Jobs to Elon Musk and Sergey Brin, have reportedly sought out such experiences, too, on the record or otherwise. In fact, using psychedelics is increasingly en vogue among C-suite types, even serving as the basis for new age corporate retreats. While medical professionals warned that psychedelics, once the villains in horror stories about the dangers of drug abuse, still carry risks, decades of academic research grant substantial scientific weight to claims that they possess healing properties. In April, the White House issued an executive order directing the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, to fast-track the review process for psychedelic drugs, which research suggests could be highly potent for treating mental health disorders, particularly for the large swaths of patients who haven't benefited from existing medications and therapies. Now, the pharmaceutical industry, and more importantly, its regulators, appear ready to bring psychedelic drugs into the mainstream of Western medicine. By most estimates, as many as 30% of patients diagnosed with major depressive disorder have proven treatment resistant. A sitting president giving psychedelics as medications prioritized attention in the Oval Office is essentially without precedent, Sabine Winkler, a lawyer and founding member of the Psychedelic Bar Association, told the Daily Upside. In the months since Trump's order, the industry has turned a corner, with a recent pair of promising late-stage clinical trial results propelling it further toward legitimacy. Investors have taken notice. The advisor shares psychedelics ETF, which tracks companies exposed to psychedelic drugs, has surged more than 35% in 2026 and more than 60% in the past 12 months. In other words, to use the parlance of mental health experts, the psychedelic drug industry may be on the verge of a breakthrough. The pharmaceutical industry and its investors simply label it an opportunity. Still, experts told The Daily Upside, the burgeoning industry faces barriers to both commercialization and widespread patient access. While psychedelic treatments are perhaps most commonly associated with psilocybin, the naturally occurring psychoactive compound in so-called magic mushrooms, they now harness an array of substances, both naturally occurring and otherwise. For instance, ibogaine, an alkaloid found in an African root shrub, was shown in a landmark Stanford University study in 2024 to have been an effective treatment for veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder. Peyote-sourced mescaline is also a commonly used naturally occurring compound, while drugs built off of synthetic compounds such as methylone, MDMA, and LSD are working their way through the pipelines, too. The science behind the various psychedelic substances tends to be similar, with the various compounds interacting with the human brain in a notably different way than the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors SRIs like Prozac and Zoloft that dominate the antidepressant market today. While SRI require daily doses to regulate serotonin levels in the brain, psychedelics engage the brain's serotonin receptors more directly, creating new brain cells and new brain wave connections in a process called neuroplasticity. Psychedelic drugs give both the psychedelic experience, which is huge for many individuals, but it's also causing these new brain connections to change. Dr. Andrew Koop, a professor at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy, told The Daily Upside, "There's a physiological change as well as the psychological aspect. The difference in how the treatments interact with the brain aligns increasingly with shifting scientific consensus on the causes of mental health disorders, long attributed to chemical imbalances. Proving the effectiveness of psychedelics to treat mental health conditions in clinical settings has proven somewhat difficult, however. For starters, maintaining an effective placebo group is inherently difficult with a drug expected to deliver an observable psychoactive experience. Meanwhile, psychedelic drugs are typically designed for therapy-assisted use, a framework that experts said the FDA's modern approval process is not necessarily designed for. A key component of the success of these medications is the therapy side of things," Dr. Koop said. "The FDA approves drugs, they don't approve therapy." Trump's April executive order is a sign that the system might be ready to change to accommodate the emerging field. And then, seventh, from Fast Company, three metrics to help you measure AI's impact. Artificial intelligence in software development has moved rapidly from experimentation to enterprise-wide deployment. Coding assistance, automated documentation, AI-powered testing, and intelligent development tools are now embedded in the daily workflows of many engineering teams. At the same time, organizations are expanding AI initiatives far beyond traditional IT functions while also raising expectations from business leaders who want faster delivery, greater automation, broader adoption, and real business outcomes. For CFO, the question is no longer whether AI is entering the enterprise, but whether the growing investment behind it is translating into measurable business value. This surge in demand is placing substantial pressure on AI development teams. Rather than supporting a handful of pilot projects, developers are now expected to deliver and maintain AI capabilities across multiple business functions simultaneously. AI can significantly increase activity and output, but more projects, more code, and more automation do not automatically translate into better business results. As AI demand spreads across functions, leaders need a clearer way to separate useful acceleration from activity that simply adds complexity. The most useful place to start is with three questions. Are teams delivering customer-visible improvements more quickly? Is quality holding steady or improving? And is AI freeing up capacity for higher value work and improved decision making? The metrics you choose need to be owned at the leadership level. Measurement that doesn't connect to a business outcome is noise. While the right mix will vary by organization, most metrics fall into three categories that matter regardless of industry or scale. The first metric to consider is speed. How quickly are teams delivering valuable enhancements? It's not just about moving faster for the sake of speed, but about accelerating the journey from concept to deployment in a way that provides real benefits to users. When AI empowers engineers to turn ideas into releases more efficiently, it enables earlier feedback, faster learning cycles, and a more direct route from investment to tangible business outcomes. The second metric to focus on is quality. Faster output is only valuable if the results maintain high standards. Leaders should watch for signs that reliability is stable or improving, such as a reduction in defects reaching customers, fewer preventable incidents, and decreased need for engineering rework. If AI increases speed but leads to more downstream issues, the supposed benefits will quickly be overwhelmed by costly setbacks. The third metric to evaluate is capacity. AI handles tasks such as drafting, summarizing, triaging, and other repetitive engineering work, but how are skilled teams using this newly freed time? The greatest benefits come from creating space for innovation, implementing customer-facing enhancements, and pursuing initiatives that drive true competitive advantage. In many organizations, these opportunities for higher-value work are the most significant return on AI investment. These three metrics of speed, quality, and capacity give leaders a practical way to judge whether AI is changing outcomes rather than just increasing activity. They are simple enough to use in business conversations and strong enough to support better investment decisions. Trust is essential for success, making it critical that AI be governed by well-defined guardrails for data usage, review, and validation. As agents enter production, the criticality rises, so leaders should establish usage policies before they are needed, not after an incident forces the issue. That means four things. Governance. Agents operate within defined policy boundaries that include controls over model access, permitted actions, and audit trails. This is what gives leaders the confidence to expand adoption without losing control. Reviewable. Agent activity is visible and surfaced into the workflows where developers already work. When a developer can see, understand, and override what an agent has done, the system has integrity. Accountable. Human judgment is the check at every critical junction. Agents write the code, open the pull request, run the tests, a human approves the merge. Aligned to outcomes. Governance and measurement must be connected. The audit trail only has value tied to the business objectives you defined at the outset. Together, these four principles turn governance from a blocker into the foundation that makes scaling AI possible. For leadership teams, measuring the impact of AI in software development isn't about throwing around numbers and technical details. It's about gaining clear insight into whether the organization is becoming more efficient, dependable, and capable of focusing employees on high-value activities. Next, 8th, from XDA Developers. This cool fan-made website shows you the last 25 years of your life with Xbox. I stumbled on a fan-made site that basically pulls together everything Microsoft has ever logged about your Xbox journey. It taps the same API that powers the Xbox app, so it can stitch together your gamer score, achievement history, and the titles you've owned right back to the original console. The neat part is the timeline view. Each month is a thin bar, and you can scroll through 25 years of play, seeing spikes when you hit a new release or finally cleared that long-standing trophy. What's under the hood is a simple mashup of public profile data and the game catalog, but the creator added a custom visualizer that maps your activity onto a scrolling canvas. It's all client-side, so there's no need for a server to store your history. The site just queries the Xbox Live endpoints and renders the results in the browser. If you've been around since the early days, it's a quiet reminder of how the ecosystem has stayed surprisingly persistent. Plug in your gamertag, and you get a personal, retro-styled snapshot that feels more like a memory lane than a stats dump. Up next, 9th, from Fettel. Trump celebrates America's 250th anniversary in weather-laid, sometimes partisan speech. President Trump capped off the 250th anniversary of the nation's founding with a late-night speech delayed by inclement weather that blended the championing of American achievements and resilience with deeply partisan rhetoric about the perceived ideological threats facing the country. Tonight we come together for one of the most joyous and glorious milestones of all time, and then, 10th, from NBC News, Trump touts Save America Act during Salute to America 250 speech. President Trump highlighted the potential approval of the Save America Act during his Salute to America 250 speech, stating his goal to require photo identification to vote and limit the use of mail-in ballots. That's the day.